So due to time constraints and sudden sickness and my little familiars that cannot be banished or dismissed or put to sleep, this episode or this week's episode is going to be cut a little bit short. Lewis and I agreed that if the episode exceeded 40 minutes, I was to cut it in half, so there's that. Just a special thanks to Tim from Tabletop Audio for providing us with a really sweet opening song. And I hope you enjoy this week's show.
Faith had died.
Oh no, you died! Sucks that I don't have any diamonds. I can't resurrect you. Hey everybody, welcome back to Deck of Crotchety Things. I'm Faith.
And I'm Lewis.
And this week we are going to be talking about the Divine Caster classes.
The Divine Duo.
The Divine Duo being Cleric and Druid. To start with a Cleric, they have a decent hit pool. They start with a D8 health. They're a multifaceted class. They have an excellent array of combat abilities and a decently wide set of non-combative skills. Their primary attributes are Wisdom, which determines how powerful their spells are, Constitution, which honestly should be everybody's stat, and Charisma, which improves their ability to turn undead.
Which should never be underestimated.
Yeah, seriously.
It doesn't come up as often as you'd like, but when it does come up, it's just amazing.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a little while, because that's one of their class features. While their main combat role is to heal, they are definitely not to be underestimated. I personally call them battle priests because they are proficient with all levels of armor and all shields except for tower shields. So they're pretty tanky. Skill-wise, clerics have concentration, craft, diplomacy, heal, knowledges arcana, history, religion, obviously religion because they're clerics, knowledge planes. They have profession and spellcraft.
The planes is so they know the address of God.
Yes.
Because the scope gets a bit skewy when we start talking about divine casters.
Oh, yeah. Because then you're playing on a whole other field.
Yes. I don't feel that they should be considered healers as their primary thing. This has become a meme and a trope, and they are the best at it. However, thinking that a cleric is just there for healing is a massive, massive disservice to the class.
Oh, actually, battle priest is what I used to call them when I was, you know, younger, like in my early 20s.
I mean, that's fair.
As I've gotten older, I have since started comparing them to the Knights Hospitaller in the Crusades, where they primarily murked people, but they knew how to treat wounds very effectively. So maybe we should start calling clerics Knights Hospitallers instead.
I'm going to have to disagree with you.
Oh, really?
Clerics are far too diverse to be given any actual particular name.
Fair enough.
You can absolutely have your healing, pious, quiet type that live in their churches with their long robes. And then you've got the Knights Hospitaller that you brought up. And then there's just proper battle mages. They're pretty good fighters in their own right. Nothing like the marshals that we went over last week. Some of them are just ridiculous at magic. They're a very, very diverse group, which makes sense because they represent such a broad thing. Religion, which has never once caused an argument in all of human history.
Nope, never.
Nope.
Not a once.
Nope.
Well, it almost kind of sounds like clerics are the fighters of the magic classes. They can do anything. You just gotta make it your own.
Yeah, the tankiest of the casters for sure. A cleric should be able to be quite far up ahead. Not front line, but definitely supporting the front line. Not all the way back. Throwing support and whatnot. They can throw support spells, but you want to be within range to just slap someone in the back of the head and say, you've been healed. Or you can even shout out to the fighter that he's got +4 strength for the rest of the encounter, which will make you a very good friend. Like, you will definitely get a Christmas card that year.
Oh yeah. Well, you would get a Christmas card if Christian God were a thing in D&D.
That's true. a winter festival card. So the main draw of the casters that we're going to be going into now is obviously the spells. And most of the cleric spells are supporting spells and interesting ones. They don't have so many explosion spells or murder rays or any of the other nonsense, but they do have an awful lot of things like blessing water, curing wounds, enchanting weapons, enchanting armor, casting light, the animal aspects such as bear endurance, bull strength, Good clerics can cast the Consecrate spell, and bad clerics can cast the Desecrate spell, which makes an area holy or unholy, depending on what their alignment is. They are also able to resurrect people from the dead, which is amazingly useful because dying happens.
Oh yeah, you just got to make sure that you have the appropriate components for that spell. You don't want to have to pay like a temple fee, basically.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a whole bunch of diamonds. Someone actually got resurrected in my game the other day, and I've already forgotten what it was. Let me have a quick look.
And while you're looking that up, I listed off a bunch of skills a little bit ago. It is also worth noting that depending on the god that the cleric worships, a cleric will have access to that god's domains. And whatever domain the cleric picks, they'll get either a bonus to a skill that they already have as a class skill, or an extra skill that counts as a class skill. So clerics who choose travel as their domain get to add survival to their list of class skills.
Yes. When you make your cleric, you choose who they serve, and you're not actually bound to a god. You can play a godless cleric.
At that point, I think you're just bound by alignment, right?
Only if you choose an alignment domain. So we'll keep it small with the gods. Each god and goddess has a bunch of domains, and these describe what sort of stuff they have a purview over. So you've got the god of the dwarves, Moradin. Love him because he's the god of my people. His domains are earth, good, law, and protection, which makes sense for a lawful good dwarven god for the underground smithers. Whereas on the other side, you've got Hextor, the god of tyranny. He's lawful evil. He has destruction, evil, law, and war. And you can, just from those domains, you can get a general feel for who that deity is. Now, as your cleric has chosen this god, he can choose any two of the domains in that god's portfolio. So if we stick with the Moradin guy, earth, good, law, and protection, my dwarven cleric would take earth and protection, which gives him actually more spells and, as Faith said, more skills. Faith, I died.
Oh no, you died. Sucks that I don't have any diamonds. I can't resurrect you.
Raise Dead was cast. It was the cheapest way to resurrect someone. 5,450 gold.
That's cheap, everybody. That's their cheapest resurrection spell.
That's a +2 suit of armor and a +1 sword, thereabouts.
Yep, that's cheap. It tells you how much life is worth in D&D.
I love the fact that death isn't final. If you're ever worried about your character dying, it's not the end. They go off somewhere else, and provided that there is some sort of access to these Helix spells, which admittedly are bottom ending at cleric level 5 spells. They're pretty high end. It's the second half then. But the cleric gets a lot of spells. Everyone gets a set number of spells dictated by their character class. And the character also gets a bonus number of spells per day based on their spellcasting ability. So for a high wisdom leveled cleric, he gets some extra spells. And this is true for everyone. Clerics get an additional spell at each level for the sole use of one domain spell. So there's spell lists in the back of the book, and you can choose freely for most of them. And then you've got a specialist list that can go in either your one super special domain spell for that level, or you can pick it as a general spell from your general pick. So it's giving you quite a lot of spells.
I like the domain spell because it's like finding an extra piece of magic candy in your pocket after you've run out of your regular stash.
That is the cutest way I've ever looked at it. Thank you for that.
I mean, that's how I always used it. The thing, this is another Faith was 12 story. I played a cleric of Hextor, and I loved my domain spells. I think I was a level 5 cleric of Hextor. Hang on. Is Desecrate a spell that a level 5 cleric would have access to?
I believe so.
Yeah, because I remember desecrating a random altar in this temple in this war-torn region that we were in. And I can't remember which god it was for, but I knew it wasn't for Hextor. And I'm like, well, this is clearly not an evil place. It is now.
You just peed all over their altar.
And I got an extra spell out of it because because the DM was like, okay, that's pretty cool. You get an extra spell today. I'm like, yes.
What?
Yeah.
Reward for role-playing?
I know, right? Who knew?
So, yeah, when you choose your domain, in addition to having access to this slightly extra spell list, there are a perk for each one you choose, which makes your cleric somewhat different to other character clerics. So if I go back to my Moradin bloke, He had Earth and Protection. So in the Earth domain, not only do I get the Earth domain spells available to me, I also get the granted power to turn or destroy air creatures as a good cleric turns undead, which is pretty cool because air creatures are stuff like invisible stalkers who, I might actually have to fact check that one. That one feels kind of edgy now. But yeah, if you're ever attacked by a bunch of air elementals, you just throw pocket sand at them and say no. Warden says no. And protection domain, you get all the protection spells, which are all really cool, like shield other, protection from energy, spell immunity. They're all really defensive spells, shockingly. And you can generate a protective ward as a supernatural ability. Someone you touch gets a resistance bonus equal to your cleric level on the next throw, which is pretty insane.
Yeah.
Because at level one, big whoop, it's a 5% boost. You get to level five and it's like, oh wow, I'm getting plus five to something just because you touched my shoulder. That's so cool. What are the domains of Hexter?
Hexter's domains are destruction, evil, law, and war. As I recall, and again, I was 12 at the time, I think my domains were war and evil. Or no, it was war and law. It was war and law. That's what it was.
Okay. Law is one of the alignment domains, and all the alignment domains give you the same granted power of your cast level is considered one higher when casting spells of this alignment. So the granted power you get would be you cast law spells as if you were one level higher than you really are. And the war one is pretty rad because it doesn't really give you an ability. It just gives you a bunch of feats. You get the free martial weapon proficiency feat for the deity's favorite weapon and weapon focus with it. So this feat means that you are more combat oriented for a war cleric. Who knew? And also get an extra 5% boost on your attack roll, which isn't huge, but it's a free boost. So, and it says here that Hexter gives you the flail light or heavy, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
That's the Sauron weapon. I've just noticed the war domain gives you the spiritual weapon spell, which lets you summon a magical floating flail because you're Hexlore that attacks on your turn, in addition to you attacking on your turn.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of punching stuff. So aside from a cleric of Hexter, have you tried anything else? Or is there any deity that you like the look of? Because the largest part of the cleric, in my opinion, is the variety between who you serve and how.
Right. Let me see here. Because there was one game I played, again, one session, but this was in my early 20s, where I played a cleric of Moradin. It was a dwarf campaign specifically. How often does that come up?
I actually played an all-dwarf campaign a while ago.
Really?
It was great fun.
Dwarves don't get enough love.
No, they never do.
Yeah, I think those were the only two clerics that I played in 3.5.
I mean, despite my love of fighters and wizards, clerics, I genuinely can't choose between the three of them. Clerics are so varied. When we were discussing the fighter, they have a very thin trunk and lots of branches coming off of it. Clerics have a very thick trunk, but only a few very, very interesting branches coming off of it. There's no bad clerics. Except the evil ones, which are also the best ones.
Yes.
You're just saying, if you're not being a necromancer cleric, you're wasting your life. Or someone else's. Just want to raise a family in peace. Leave me be. So clerics offer an awful lot of roleplay because they can really tightly hold on to the gods in and around the world, which really grounds your character into a roleplay sort of moment. And it doesn't even have to be too much.
So other stuff about clerics is their alignment is pretty important to them because they have to be within one step of their god's alignment, either on the evil good axis or on the chaotic lawful axis, but they can't be different on both. So
yes,
like,
we haven't actually talked about alignment yet.
Yeah, but I'm bringing it up now because it's important to how clerics cast their spells. So like my cleric of Hextor, she was lawful evil because Hextor is lawful evil. His clerics can be lawful neutral, lawful evil, or neutral evil. And past that, they can't branch out from those three alignments because then there would be consequences such as losing all of their cool spells and features. The only thing they would be able to keep would be their simple weapon proficiency, their armor and shield proficiencies. They can get that stuff back.
You could find a new deity, which would give you like a temporary penalty as you're trying to buddy up to this new guy. But it's not so ironclad as just you've lost 90% of your class now. Yeah. Have fun.
Yeah, you can buddy up to a new god, or you can go through atonement to get your cool stuff back. which I haven't quite looked at atonement yet. And this is something that druids also are sometimes subject to. If they stop being druids, they would have to go through atonement to become druids again, essentially.
Yeah, atonement is the magical apology letter. It's not overly taxing, the spell. The problem is, if you are the cleric in question, you have to go find another cleric because you don't have spells at the moment. Or a druid, you could find a druid as well. And it's not particularly expensive. It just takes time out of the adventure and or what was happening to go and fix something because you kicked a football through the neighbor's window. So we talked very briefly about being able to turn undead, which is a really cool feature. Paladins get it as well, which we'll talk about later, but they are nowhere near as good about it. Clerics just hold their holy symbol up and say, no! And if you're a good cleric, that will send all the lesser undead scurrying away.
Or
if you're twice the level of them, they explode.
Yeah, it's
which
fun.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
I think three separate times I have been a cleric that has reached level two and the GM has gone, oh, I can give you like a six skeleton fight now. And I've gone, okay, turn undead. And they all explode because they're a skeleton. They die.
You think maybe that's what he wanted, was to watch them explode?
No, they were all very upset.
Maybe they should have thought twice.
They weren't upset. It's just we go through the system of how it works and they look at it and they're like, oh, you feel a bit deflated because you thought you had a really cool encounter and it turns out it's just popped by a single action.
See, it's cool in a different way, though.
Yeah, and that's what my class does. There are a lot of undead that have turn resistance, which makes them count as more powerful than they are. And a few have turn immunity, but those are really high level stuff. And it's a check, so it's not an automatic thing that happens. And then it only happens so many times a day. So
one thing worth noting about turn undead, if you are an evil cleric, instead of things exploding, you can actually make them do your bidding.
Yes.
And I recall another one session thing where I think it was my little brother was an evil cleric and a bunch of skeletons died, but then he commanded the rest of them. I think he was able to command four of them. He commanded them to use the bones of their fallen comrades to construct a litter for him, and then he made them carry him around in in a bone litter made of their friends.
Oh, that's disgusting. I love it.
Yeah, my little brother was... Yeah, he's fun.
So an evil cleric, instead of shouting out the word no, he just shouts out no, uno reverse, and steals all the lich's undead. Or you can make any undead that you control or are friendly to you more powerful, which is pretty neat as well, because that means the lich can counter them.
Yes.
Oh, we missed the biggest thing.
Oh, spontaneous casting?
Yes. Any spell that you've already memorized for that day, at any level, for example, you had memorized that magic weapon spell, you can swap it out for either a healing spell or an inflict spell.
Depends on your alignment, though.
It depends on your alignment, your god, and if you're just gimping the system a little bit.
Yep.
If your god is good, it's a heal spell. If you are good, it's a heal spell. If your god is evil, it's an inflict spell. If you are evil, it's an inflict spell. And these are either clauses, not both.
Right.
So if you are good or your god is good, it's a heal spell. But if you're a neutral cleric of a neutral deity, you can choose at character creation which way you're going to lean on this.
Right.
So you can play a lawful neutral cleric who just casts inflict spells all the time. Don't ask questions. But yeah, they're really cool. They're really diverse. They get pretty honking good armor. And yeah, I do love a cleric.
Yes. I love clerics too.
I don't actually hate any of the classes in third edition. They're all really unique.